Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we are, beginning of the holiday season, actually, and we have a media project for you that is filled with holiday spirit. That is because the people in the room today are just thrilled to be here. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady.
It is wonderful to be here.
Well, it's great to see you.
And she sounds really
Dr.
nice.
Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor, pundit, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, here's what. This morning, this gigantic bunch of ads. Showed up. We think it's from your newspaper, but we're checking, Rex.
Ads are good things in newspapers.
Is Thanksgiving the number one ad day of the year as it comes
Thanksgiving
before?
Is the biggest newspaper of the year.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? It's also the biggest travel day of the year.
Well, there you go. I mean, the world is full of coincidences, so, you know, maybe people are trying to get away from their newspapers.
You know, Rex, that is so condescending. Well, there you go.
Well, there you go.
So pity the poor newspaper carrier on Thanksgiving Day. They haul out these 2 or 3 pound papers, which are stuffed full of inserts that everybody wants to read. Let's hope it's a big newspaper reading day.
Tip
too.
Them well. Well, let's tip those well. Carriers well. How about that? Isn't that a good idea?
It is, mm-hmm. And we do. Can I just ask you something about this now? Those piles of ads have valuable coupons in them, right?
They do. Mm-hmm.
How valuable do people? I mean, the Chartoks, I don't think, have ever used a coupon in their life.
My goodness.
And I'm going to get mail on this saying, who do you think you are? Anyway, but what do you do with those coupons? You cut them out and you bring them to the cashier and you
this
pay.
This is sounding a lot like George H.W. Bush looking at the first optical character scanner, right?
So you pay 20 cents less on a box of Tide or whatever?
Yeah. So the coupons tend to be more Sunday, but the inserts that you are seeing in Thanksgiving papers are all about these Black Friday sales, and Black Friday is huge. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, big shopping day. But I used to be kind of a coupon maven. You can save, you know, hundreds of dollars a year with these coupons. I guess hundreds don't matter to you, then you don't need the coupon.
I guess that's true. You know, when you're doing as well as Dr. Chartok, you don't have to worry.
They do matter to me, but I've never really quite been indoctrinated
into
that
culture. We have to recognize that is why some people buy their newspaper. You know,
really?
That is absolutely true. That's why you're able to put out what we call the early Sunday edition, which is actually the Saturday newsstand paper, and it has all the Sunday coupons. A lot of people buy it for the coupons.
So in my naivete, let me ask you, can you predict newspaper sales on particular days based on the existence of the coupons?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can.
And those days are what? Thursday and Saturday?
Sunday.
Sunday in this country, Saturday in Canada. Saturday is the big day in Canada, and you would think that it would be, that people would like to get their coupons earlier. All of this, by the way, is a little bit humbling for Judy and me, being editors, being forced to be reminded, thank you, Dr. Chartok, that what we do really matters less than the coupons.
Well,
that's all
I'm
right.
going to get some mail here, and I'm sorry that if anybody thinks I'm either elitist, or I'm just stupid. I obviously haven't ever figured this out. I'm going to get my coupons. I'm going to cut them out. I'm going to go over to the Big Y, the Price Shop.
Here's a test for you, Alan. I brought this in to see how stupid you are because there's a software firm called Parsley, that's parse.ly, that tracks and analyzes the traffic on more than 400 publishers, including big ones like Reuters, The Atlantic, New Republic, and so on. And they report the top news stories of 2015. Now, this is not the most important news stories, but the top traffic news stories. And I want to see how many of these you can identify. All right?
Okay.
Cecil the Lion.
Cecil D.E. Lion?
No.
Cecil the Lion. He's in, one of those Broadway plays, right? Yeah.
I know he knows this because I've heard him talk about
this. The Lion King, no?
The lion who was shot by the dentist,
of course,
right?
Of course.
Yes. Cecil the Lion. Okay. Can you name?
I remember that.
Can you tell us who
I don't want to play this game
Ahmed
anymore.
Muhammad is. Ahmed Muhammad.
Ahmed Muhammad? No, I don't. I can't.
Yeah, he was the young lad who built the clock that was mistaken for a bomb
in
school.
Yeah. Now I remember that one, too.
Okay.
Stop this. You're making an idiot out of me. Ask Judy the next
one. Here's why I'm raising these questions. Because for the top 7 news events of the year, based on the most read stories.
Yes,
this,
Cecil the Lion was right up there.
Yeah. What is significant is that for 5 of the 7, more traffic came to these websites from social than from search. That is, from Facebook and Twitter. More people went through Facebook and Twitter to get to this than from Google and other search engines. Isn't that an interesting shift?
It is. Yesterday, not that this may be apropos, my dad used to say about everything, but just yesterday somebody said, young people, because we were having a discussion about young people and National Public Radio and all like that, and it said, young people don't use Facebook anymore. They're on to other things like Instagram and other sites. So has Facebook become a place for old gas people like me?
Older.
I'm afraid
people.
So. Older people. It's still a wonderful way to deliver news, but you're delivering
Facebook,
it to your... That's why your kids don't, or your grandkids in your case. But it would be... here's one. Can you tell us about Ashley?
No. Stop. Stop this
Ashley
right
Madison.
Now. I remember that because that's the prostitution site. You sign up to have an affair.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, anyway. I wonder how many of those stories we put on our front page.
Yeah, very few. I think that's absolutely true. In fact, only one of them, I believe, Charlie Hebdo. Was also one of the top 7 digitally.
Well, yeah, because that had such profound implications for the press.
Mayweather versus Pacquiao, the boxing match, that didn't get on the front page.
No.
Bobby Christina Brown, Rachel Dolezal. Do you know who Rachel Dolezal was?
Of course I do, but I'm not telling you.
Okay. Anyway, it shows you two things. It does show you, to Judy's point, the difference between the news product in print and what really moves along the web.
So what's your point? I mean, you raise this with us, but you don't drive it home. You have to tell us what you're saying. Is it another reason newspapers are dead?
I was just pointing out that PhD does not guarantee that you know anything about what's going on in the world.
I do. It's not the PhD, it's the memory.
And let's clarify that newspapers are not dead.
Yes, quite. As you would be pointing out by all those coupons that people are picking up out of the newspapers.
Right.
Why do you think people are getting coupons? Because newspapers are a great delivery source for information, and including shopping information.
So why don't you forget about the news and just give people coupons every day?
Well, you know, and the other danger is more and more people are getting their coupons online and their inserts online. You can get some of these Target, Best Buy, Kmart inserts online this weekend, and so that's always a concern for us. But instead of just wringing our hands, we've got to figure out how to adapt.
Yeah. Well, Judy, what time do you get up in the morning?
Around 4:30.
Yeah, well, that's
just because
late.
Of my age, I think. As I've gotten older, I get up earlier.
Well, that's not true with Rex.
No.
He sleeps later.
If only. All the media are changing. Our reach is growing, but it is growing outside print.
Yeah.
And so that's a very good thing. If we're successfully navigating this change, it's really important. I saw a piece recently talking about NPR being in great trouble because the audience is aging significantly.
An excellent piece.
And so everybody, each of us in the same way, is figuring out how to adjust to this new dynamic.
That's right. That's why we had quite an extensive meeting just the other day. I'd be glad to talk about it with you. But it does appear, NPR has a big problem. Its core audience and our core audience are older.
Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, but the kids are not listening to the radio any more than they're reading newspapers.
Yep.
And so how do we adjust? Do we start playing rock and roll during our newscasts, in which case you may offend your core audience? And that's something you have to worry about. You've often told the story, Rex, about how you tried to take the Bridge column out.
Yeah. Right.
Because you thought nobody was, and you really got bombarded.
Yeah. Actually, I did take out the bridge column ultimately, but it was, take out the crosswords.
It was hilarious.
But I think that goes to this question of how much of your content do you use then you go forward with Cecil the Lion and Ahmed Muhammad and Rachel Dolezal? I mean, those topics that are grabbing people.
I know them
digitally.
All, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do if the information taste of your audience is shifting and yet you know that you need to be giving people information that's important, that you need to be giving people broccoli as well as ice cream? Right.
I couldn't agree more. You know, my wife tells me to eat broccoli every day.
Yeah, it goes with this whole notion of whether editors know best, you know, whether we know what the news is.
That's
and the public
right.
doesn't
well,
know.
Are you implying that maybe you don't know best?
No, in fact, I am implying that I don't always know what's best. I think editors are there for a reason. They have very good news judgment, but I think we need to broaden our horizons in terms of what is news and what people care about. Otherwise, we are going to wither up and die.
Okay, so let me give you an example. Today, as we sit here, there is a big issue as to whether or not there might be a sort of mini war breaking out or a major war breaking out between Turkey and Russia. Which is more important, Cecil the Lion, which everybody wanted to know about, or the potential for war between Russia and NATO?
Yes.
Now, if huge. My intuition is that the kids don't care that much about the war end, but are much more interested in easily digestible Cecil the Lion.
Absolutely. This is why the adjustment is difficult, because the front page of the newspaper, you could balance that. As an editor, you are always looking for, you know, we've talked before here about the Golly Martha, the story that you envision this guy sitting there over his bowl of Post Toasties, which, by the way, is not manufactured anymore. And he's
Marjorie
saying,
Post by Merriweather.
Yeah, Golly yes. Martha, listen to this.
Yeah.
And that story being the thing that people would not necessarily think was important, but was worth talking about. And we used to, Judy and I, in making the decisions about what goes on the front page, would think about that. But now, increasingly, because it's a digital world, you don't have that opportunity so much. People are grabbing what they want instead of getting served up a platter.
Right. So they get more choice making, right? They can make their own choices.
Yeah.
And so this country, which has a certain number of people who don't know anything, are going to have more people who don't know anything.
All right, so we go back to one of Rex's projects is news literacy, and I think this is an issue where our country has to work harder to make the young people more interested in news.
How?
And how? There's a whole educational system that I think they're starting to do this, and I think maybe we're delivering the news in the wrong way. Maybe we need to do it, maybe different forms, different platforms. I mean, John Stewart did a good job of getting the news out to a younger audience.
Yeah, you
maybe
know.
That is the approach we need to take going forward. I mean, the young people are the ones who would potentially be involved in any war or escalation of fighting that's going to happen over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so they maybe somebody should point that out to them.
Yeah, maybe somebody should.
Well, yeah. You know, my teacher in the 10th grade at the New Lincoln School, Sidney B. Simon, who went on to be a great education professor and who listens to this program, I know,
wow.
Sidney B. Simon used to make us read the New York Times every day.
Excellent.
And in fact, told us how to fold it so that when riding the subway, we could read it with the proper folding.
Yeah, and a generation was really disappointed when the six-column grid was introduced, because that ruined it, because that, you know, it was an eight-column grid. Those narrow 11-pica-wide columns are the ones that are just perfect for
hey,
folding.
Hey, Rex,
it
is
like that
how they say it in the Midwest? Ruined it? We say wound it.
Ruined. Is that what you say there? Like roof? So this is the Media Project. If you want to offer us your thoughts, media@wamc.org is our email address, and we do appreciate it when you send us your thoughts and ideas. Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette, Rex Smith from the Times Union, and Alan Shartok, the CEO, our host here at Northeast Public Radio. You know, one of the things that people will miss if they don't pay attention to the, let's say, establishment media is the effort to ferret out what is true from what is false among candidates who are on the ballot. This has recently become hugely controversial because of Donald Trump's tendency to say stuff that is flatly, frankly, not true. And the media has been calling him on this, and he's getting upset about it. And what's really kind of astonishing is that the more he is called out for saying things that aren't factual, thousands upon thousands of New Jersey Muslims celebrating the fall of the World Trade Towers on 9/11, for example, which did not happen, the more he asserts that it in fact is true, and his followers believe him. They disbelieve.
That's because we have a country of know-nothings. So in other words, the more know-nothings we have, the more they're likely to be angry and to believe that kind of garbage. I got an email this morning from a very good listener who says, well, if all this is true about Trump and he's lying, shouldn't he be arrested?
Well, can't do that.
You know, this is a story that really made me proud to be a journalist, because if you look at the coverage of it, the real good coverage, they really tear it apart. And they did a very thorough job of trying to track down what he could possibly be referring to. And they came up empty-handed time and time again. It's one of those cases where just because somebody says something again and again and again, that doesn't mean it's true. But why people are believing him, I think in part, I don't think they're trusting the media.
Also because they're prejudiced. I mean, you know, they're prejudiced against Muslims. And so therefore, it confirms their prejudice. And they say, okay, I'll have some of that.
Confirmation bias, well-known phenomenon in sociology. Yeah, absolutely.
What, do you have a PhD?
I just say stuff like that when you're here. But it is true. I mean, it is true that I'd like to associate myself with those journalists who've been calling him out. And that's a good thing when he says, I watched in Jersey City, New Jersey, where thousands and thousands of people were cheering as that building was coming down. Thousands of people were cheering.
So the New York Times says, oh, you did not, because we went back and we looked at every single piece of tape and you didn't see any such thing on television. He says, Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
And he confirmed it again and again and again. Day after day, people come back with, no, this has not happened. There were some overseas Muslims being happy about this, but nothing in Jersey.
Absolutely.
New Jersey is sort of overseas. At least over the Hudson.
That's a New Yorker talking. There you go, folks. If you're listening from New Jersey, that's Shark Talk. No. Anyway, well, you know, and part of this, too, is the question about our allegiance to polls and paying so much attention to Donald Trump because he is the leading Republican candidate. And there's some question as to whether polls are even an accurate reflection of reality anymore. And maybe journalism has gone too far in paying attention to polls.
Well, I don't know. You know, I am a big believer in polls. And I think, as we have discussed here many times, a poll is a snapshot, a moment in time when they take a look at how people feel. They may feel differently when they're exercising their ultimate responsibility to vote on election day. But with great repetition, we see that polls are very close to being correct a day before an election, 2 days before elections. Not always, but quite frequently they are. And so therefore, we now have the, I'm sorry to say this because I am one, the liberal press is saying, okay, you know, we don't really believe in polls because the news isn't that good.
Well, you have Nate Silver bringing to the forefront the idea that the poll, what's happening with these Republican polls are polling, what is it, likely voters?
Yeah.
And so that can distort what's happening. And because that's such a great focus on the polls, it's driving the public debate and focusing on Trump in a way that maybe he is not the choice of mainstream Republicans.
Most of those polls actually now, rather than, it's hard to say likely voters, most of them I think are now covering Republican-leaning adults and registered voters. And so, and the problem is that now with polls, because an increasing number of people use cell phones, so the polls are trying to respond to that by using non-traditional sampling methods. Instead of calling people, they'll try to buttonhole them in. And any poll is only as good as the adjustments that they make for the whole, for the actual real population versus who they talk to. If your sample of the people you're talking to does not reflect the national or whatever the
distribution.
Distribution is, yeah, you adjust to it. And that is, that's awkward.
I think, you know, to be fair to the pollsters, I think many of them are, as you suggest, trying hard to catch up with this. So, for example, if you know that a lot of people, young people, for example, do not have landlines in their house. And, you know, we're not talking people in their 40s. So we're not talking about children.
Wow, are you that old?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I'm 74.
Wow. Sorry, all I said was wow. I didn't
there
mean
are days that comedic pauses are important. And what they do is the pollsters, I believe, are now calling people randomly on their cell phones because they know what the cell phone numbers are. And then they start to ask the questions which categorize the people who are on the other. Did you vote in the last election? Do you plan to vote in this election? And then the only thing that pollsters have a little bit of problems with are liars. People who say they voted, oh, yeah, I voted. Yeah, well, maybe you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, Nate Silver, he points out that the percentage of people who in the polls say are they're supporting Donald Trump is roughly the same as the people who believe the Apollo moon landing was faked. So let's just bear in mind.
That is such a liberal sort of elitist, condescending, spitting down the hill, you know, sort of theory on the part of the people who don't like the fact that Trump is doing so well. You want to know why Trump is doing so well? Because he was on TV.
Yeah.
Because he was on TV.
Maybe he's appealing to all those people who are just picking up the coupons rather than reading the news, do you think? Is that a liberal
elitist? No, I'm a great believer of people who pick up coupons because I know that they're trying to feed their family better and to do better things. You know, how dare you suggest that I, just because I don't use coupons and I'm stupid, that I don't believe other people who are in front of me in the line in the supermarket and just taking out all these coupons and it's taking forever to get through the line, you know what I mean?
That's Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio, yeah. Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and I'm Rick Smith of the Times Union. We're here on the Media Project from Albany, New York. By the way, NBC has to give free airtime.
Oh boy, this is quite a story.
Four Republican candidates because NBC put Donald Trump on as host of the Saturday Night Live.
Didn't they know when they were doing that they were going to face this?
You know, there were protests before this happened. That they didn't. Some Republicans were challenging NBC not to let him host Saturday Night Live.
Well, but didn't they know? I mean, you know, we here at Public Radio, once a guy becomes a candidate, we insist that if the person is coming on, that the major opponent
there
comes
you go.
On also.
The major opponent comes on also.
Well, you
caught
know,
yourself
if
there,
the
didn't
Cowboy
you?
Party is on
yeah,
in there,
the
that becomes a little bit restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, they're talking about four or five candidates.
Oh, yeah.
They're
and they're going to have to do it.
John Kasich, Mike Huckabee, Jim Gilmore, and Lindsey Graham. But here's something that's interesting.
What about the 1% Pataki?
1% Pataki.
He's still arguing for a piece of the broadcast.
Of the action.
Yeah.
But NBC's kind of ignoring him, it seems like. That's really a shame. Anyway, we turn our attention here to Chicago, if we could, where there's a remarkable situation developing. The Chicago Police Department was forced to release video of a fatal police shooting from last fall in which a 17-year-old was killed by a police officer. The police officer subsequently, after the video's released, charged with murder. And this all happened as a result of a freelance reporter, a guy named Brandon Smith, and it was his lawsuit over the summer that forced the release of the police dashboard camera. And for people who believe that, you know, we sometimes hear from the left that we're simply voices for the establishment, this is where the media is standing up and can really make a difference, right?
Well, yeah.
I was really interested in the fact he's a freelancer. And when I watched the video last night and I listened to him being interviewed on, I think it was MSNBC, and I kept on saying, well, wonder what brave newspaper organization put up all the legal money to fight this in court. And then I was amazed to find out it was a freelancer.
Yes. I think he had the assistance of a watchdog organization that has the unfortunate acronym. It's C-R-A-P-A-P. and I can't quite remember what the thing is. But anyway, but he had some support. But you're right. And one of the arguments that I often make when people attack big media is sometimes it takes big media to fight big government. And
and your newspaper, the Times Union, has been very aggressive, and the Hearst companies have been very aggressive about using their legal talent and clout to do just that.
Yeah. It is expensive, and that can be a deterrent, and which is a sad case. And in this case, he had said that the mainstream news media had not been successful and able to get these videotapes. You would think the videotapes would be available in every case, but I mean, I'm sure Rex has the same problem.
Well,
again and again and again, we ask police agencies for videotapes of events, and it's always a fight.
And they said, as they did in Chicago, it was on NPR, they say, no, we don't want it because it might lead to bad stuff. In other words, like riots, if that stuff is shown.
Well, and we have a particular problem in New York State. It's called Section 50A of the New York Civil Rights Law, and this protects police officers and firefighters and corrections officers from having the release of what might be used in disciplinary action against them. And this is a piece of legislation that the powerful law enforcement unions pushed through. And now everybody's afraid to let go of it. But that means that there is less oversight of these people, less of an opportunity for the public to see what's going on than on any other profession. And it's really kind of astonishing. You cannot find out
what's going on. Because they have more power.
Yeah, and more opportunity for abuse. But they're
protected.
You can
broadly interpret this to mean any videotape cannot be released because any videotape involving a police officer could possibly lead to disciplinary action.
So why don't you editors get together and march on the Capitol?
Well, there are more cops than there are editors.
No.
And we've been fighting on this issue for a long time, and we have not been successful, but it does need to be dealt with.
But that would make a good visual, wouldn't it?
That would make a good, there you go, what a notion. All right, so we're kind of out of time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. How could that be? I have a luncheon date with Cecil D. Lyon.
Well, you're not going to get much food in that case.
Ellen Chartuck, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.